I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the Pro Wrestling Index. I'm your host, Guy Drinkle. I think what's going to happen from now on is that me and Andy are going to kind of rotate on hosting duties whilst he's having, whilst he's sorting out his shifts and stuff like that. So we may be on a bit of a rotation, but for big shows, obviously WrestleMania coming up, I think we'll try and keep it to the original dream team. We may even go three man on WrestleMania and stuff like that. But unfortunately, it's me, Guy Drinkle, and joining me tonight is Mo Chatra. How are you doing, Mo?
Oh, yeah, I'm doing pretty good. I'm doing well. All the better for speaking to you, Mr. Drinkle.
Thank you.
I've got to say that because for those that are not aware, Guy and I are part of WhatsApp groups to discuss Liverpool. And, you know, I spend the week in between these pods winding them up about the possible departure of Alberto Moreno. I need to be nice to Guy.
He does. And the less said about our WhatsApp groups, especially today, which I imagine some of the writers will know about, the better. But that's an inside story that we can't really share on here. But we'll crack on with the wrestling stuff. before we go on to the Fastlane review, just probably a big piece of news that's came out. I think it's Dave Meltzer, who normally releases all things WWE and stuff like that. The Fabulous Moolah Memorial Battle Royale, obviously the women's version of Andre the Giant. It got such a backlash from fans because obviously Fabulous Moolah's historic, actions back in women's wrestling so many years. I'll allow you go into it a bit more, but it looks like they're going to change the name for that cost of this backlash. So, Mo, do you want to tell us about just why people have such a backlash against Moolah herself and your thoughts on the decision?
Yeah, so obviously this past week on Raw, WWE announced that in addition to the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal, it would be an equivalent battle royal for the women, which is basically a match to get all female members of the roster who aren't tied up in other matches to still appear on the WrestleMania card. And they mentioned that it would be named after the Fabulous Moolah, who's obviously a former long-time WWF Women's Champion and a Hall of Famer. But this prompted a backlash with many fans, in fact, coming out in criticism of the WWE, citing the fact that Moolah was alleged to have been involved in people trafficking, abuse, emotional and otherwise, of women who wanted to make it in the wrestling business back in the 50s, 60s, right through till the 80s. A lot of this stuff, if you research it, is fairly well documented. A lot of wrestlers from, that era from the 50s through to the 80s have spoken out in heavy criticism of Moolah. So there has been this backlash growing all throughout the week, and the WWE decided today that it's perhaps best to drop Moolah and her name being linked to this Battle Royal. So they just announced it as the WrestleMania Women's Battle Royal. I was hoping they'd name it after Sweet Sapphire, but not to be. Well, not just yet. But yeah, it's probably the wise thing to do. WWE is very image conscious and they don't like to be involved in any real forms of controversy. And no, they clearly acknowledge that the decision to name the Battle Royal after Moolah was an unpopular one. So they've very quickly taken a U-turn and removed her name from being associated to the match. So I'm completely fine with that. And, you know, WWE will move on. And the whole episode, I imagine, will be forgotten about largely by the time next week rolls around.
Yeah, almost forgotten as quickly as Ronda Rousey's promise of being on every show, of every Raw show up until Mania. don't worry, you get free Snickers, though. But yeah, I mean, I didn't really know the history of it before this all came out. I mean, I heard little bits about it, but obviously this kind of exploded the issue onto the scene, and reading the stuff that has, or that came to my attention, it just seems like a stupid idea to give her this Memorial Battle Royal in the first place. I mean, people seem to think that she held back women's wrestling that much that it's why it stagnated for so bloody long. And if that is one of the main reasons, it's only fair that this backlash has happened. But yeah, we'll move on from that because it's pretty quick news. So we'll go on to the Fastlane review, which will probably be even more boring. We'll start with the first match, Shinsuke Nakamura versus the beloved Rusev. We'll try and thicken this part out, probably talk a bit more about Rusev, but just your thoughts on the match, really, Mo.
Well, actually, I went into it not expecting a great deal. I was worried, in fact, on the preview pod with Andy last week, that obviously because of the kind of cult popularity that Rusev's enjoying at the moment, that it might then prompt a negative reaction towards Nakamura, which is the last thing they need when he's lining up for a big match at WrestleMania against AJ Styles. But that didn't prove to be the case. Whilst Rusev obviously got a very good reaction, there was certainly not an adverse reaction towards Nakamura. So really both got a good reaction, which was good to see. And in fact, I thought that the match was really good. I thought, you know, they worked very well. It built well, had a very good closing stretch. Last couple of minutes were very good. And, you know, in the end, the right man went over. Nakamura needed a good, strong victory heading into WrestleMania, and that's exactly what he got. And I thought that the way the match was booked and laid out, it didn't really harm Rusev to any great extent either. So I thought that he was protected quite well, and I'm hoping that post-WrestleMania they actually start to do something a bit more meaningful with him. But he's lumbered to an extent with a comedy gimmick, so they might have to slightly tweak on that, which would be a shame because his double out with Aiden English is just fantastic. But I was pretty pleased with this as an opener.
Yeah, I mean, I fully agree. I thought the match was it was surprisingly good. I mean, I don't think Rusev's ever really exploded in terms of being in the ring, being in great matches. I mean, we've seen poor feuds with John Cena and stuff like that, but he hasn't really had the opportunity to work with that many people who are as good as Shinsuke Nakamura. But I thought this match really gelled quickly. I'm not sure how long the match was, but I imagine it was only like between 10 and 15 minutes, but it really was a good match. But in terms of Rusev, you obviously said after WrestleMania and stuff like that, but is there a risk that he goes a bit cold? I mean, it seemingly lasted, probably it seems like a couple of months now, but you say he might have to change a bit from the comedy thing. But I mean, you look at the mid-card, which we'll obviously talk about the match and stuff like that. You mean, we've got Jinder Mahal probably going to be in a WrestleMania match. So if Rusev can't get on the main the WrestleMania card now when he's this over, is it a bit disappointing for you?
I mean, I've no doubt that he will be on the card. It's likely that he'll probably end up in the Battle Royal.
Yeah.
And you know, if he goes on and wins it, then, you know, that'll get a fantastic reaction because, you know, go back to the Rumble, the reaction he got was just incredible. And, you know, it'll be largely the same types of fans. In fact, a lot of the same fans that were at the Rumble will also be there at WrestleMania, and they'll be very vocally behind him. So it'd be nice to see him win that match and then perhaps use that to propel himself into something a bit more meaningful. But just based on history and how WWE operates, comedy acts, which is sort of what he kind of is at this moment in time, don't tend to get big title feuds or certainly title runs. It's quite rare for that to happen. So, you know, Rusev as a babyface, cool, great, but they might just need to, or they might just want to tone down the comedy stuff a little bit if they want to push him into perhaps a WWE title program or at least a match. But and even if they don't, you know, the US title, you know, wherever that ends up, you know, he might be a good contender for it in the weeks and months after WrestleMania.
Yeah, yeah, I fully agree. I think we've talked about Rusev's potential quite a few times on the show. I mean, I think it was the draft last year. It might have been even the first draft when he came back from an injury, and I think we were talking about how he looked like fitter than ever, and he was going to be a main event, a possible main event heel. But we'll move on from Rusev, and we'll talk about the US title match, which kind of linked in with him a bit. Randy Orton versus Bobby Roode, bit bland match, really. I wasn't overly enthused by it, but Randy Orton winning, do you think that's the right call, firstly?
Well, I was surprised. I didn't expect that. You know, I thought Roode would probably retain. I think that's what I predicted last week. Or did I? In fact, I can't remember what I predicted. you know, it's not something that really does a great deal for the title. I didn't think the title with Roode was particularly going places compared to, say, the Intercontinental title with The Miz. I certainly think the title's been elevated to an extent with his title run. You know, he really tries to get the belt over is something that's important. And that's something I feel that Roode hasn't really quite been able to achieve. And I don't think the booking of him, certainly since he stepped up from NXT, has been as effective as it should have been. But was it the wrong thing to do? Not necessarily. You know, it looks like they're leading towards that kind of three-way match between Orton, Roode, and Jinder Mahal at WrestleMania. And, you know, I'd be fine with them putting the title perhaps on Jinder, and then maybe Orton moves to Raw, as is speculated. And then it's perhaps Jinder versus Rusev for the title after WrestleMania. But, yeah.
You must be the only person who wants Mahal to win something. Other than Vince.
Yeah, and that's just as a transition champion to get the belt onto somebody more deserving of it. But yeah, it's something that I'm not really majorly aggrieved about, the fact that you know, it switched hands at the show. And you know, the match itself, though, I've got to say, again, was a surprise. You know, the first 10 minutes, I thought, dear, oh dear, this is just going to be absolutely horrible. But certainly the last 5 minutes, and it went nearly 20 minutes, by the way, the last 5 minutes in particular, I thought the match picked up superbly well and was, in my view, almost as good as the opener in the end. Sure, very slow start, but, you know, the last few minutes were really quite good, I felt. So, you know, Orton showed that, you know, he is capable of working entertaining match. It's just that as an act, as a performer, he feels so tired, so kind of overdone, oversaturated in terms of whatever he's done over the last 15, 16 years, that it's just not an enjoyable part of the show anymore. It's just somebody who's just there to make up the numbers. And for somebody who's held versions of the world championship on, what is it, 14 or 15 occasions, that's a shame.
Well, he is a Grand Slam champion. I think that's all the word. He is a Grand Slam champion. I mean, he's held literally everything. So, just on Randy Orton, I mean, it doesn't look like he's going to retire anytime soon. But where does he rank in terms of legendary status? I mean, he probably will be a first ballot Hall of Famer. But is he up there with Cena, for example? Or do you think he kind of fell away that much in these last few years, whether that's via motivation or just bad booking or what? But where do you judge him in terms of legendary status?
Well, I mean, for somebody that's been a top star for well over a decade and having had as many world title runs as he's had, I really don't, when I look at him, think, oh, legend. I mean, he's somebody who's had some great matches. He's somebody who's been involved in some memorable storylines, memorable angles, and has been a big star in the biggest wrestling company for, as I say, over a decade. So you would think that, yeah, he's a no-brainer, you know, when it comes to the term legend. But I just don't feel like that with him. And maybe it's a case of perhaps him having to retire or perhaps refine his character and move in a different direction for me to feel that he deserves that title of legend. But for me, despite all his accomplishments, he's still not deserving of that. And I think that's because certainly for the last 6-7 years, it really feels like he's just gone through the motions. And he's had countless feuds with John Cena and others, but yeah, it just feels like the Randy Orton that really was such an enjoyable character some 8, 9, 10 years ago, is somebody that we haven't seen for a long, long time. And, you know, he doesn't really seem to have been all that asked about, you know, perhaps changing his character to try and remain relevant in the way that somebody like Chris Jericho has tried, you know, who's reinvented himself successfully on multiple occasions. And, you know, despite the fact, he's 8, 9 years older than Randy Orton, feels more relevant, more fresh, and more certainly deserving of that legendary title than Orton does.
Yeah, well, it's weird because I kind of agree. I mean, I imagine he will be a first ballot Hall of Famer, as I said, but he's just been so bland for so long, really. I mean, I'm thinking about it whilst you're speaking now. I mean, I think Nathan asked it in the WhatsApp group, what was his last great match, and I think I said probably the main event with Daniel Bryan and Batista. But before that, I mean, was his last good feud with Christian or something like that, probably back in 2011. It just seems like he's not been that, he's been so irrelevant for so long. It genuinely does feel like that. So yeah, he's such a weird character. I mean, being this weird face character doesn't really help. And even just looking at his Twitter, he obviously is a natural bit of a dick. So he definitely needs to change heel, and I hope after WrestleMania he does go to Raw, because I think he'd probably suit going back there as well. But we'll move on from Randy, and we'll go back to the triple threat match with Jinder, which seems to be happening at WrestleMania. I mean, we said Jinder may win it just as kind of a transitional champion, but any chance you think Rude can go back to being his NXT Rude and then winning the title?
Well, that's also possible as well. But, you know, they might decide, well, let's just keep the title on Randy because he's a big star and we don't really know what else to do with him. So
let's just keep the title on. Could the swap US and IC title? I think that probably may work if they want to put Randy on Raw.
Yeah, I mean, that's possible as well. They might just decide to move the titles across brands, and maybe that allows them to bring different kind of opponents for each champion, and opens up some different possibilities. But certainly when it comes to the pecking order, the intercontinental title at this moment feels the more relevant, more prestigious belt than the US title. US title really is something that's lacked momentum for quite some time now.
Yeah. I'm trying to thicken up the show, so we're going to stick with the US title and the mid-card titles. What do you think is the problem? Because, I mean, mid-card, the only people I can really think of that have held the titles and actually done well with them are The Miz and John Cena. So what do you think is the problem with the mid-card at the minute? Because nobody seems to be able to hold a title and make it actually relevant or good other than them two.
Yeah, I mean, I thought the Kevin Owens title run wasn't that bad either. Mm. The US title. These are secondary belts, and they always have been. And they were secondary to the World Championships. Obviously, the US title started out in WCW and was the equivalent of the Intercontinental title in that company. And the idea behind those titles is that they should be the belts that are used for those talents that are up and coming, who could one day become world champions, but are not quite ready yet. So it's about helping them with building their momentum, building their kind of confidence as well, to see how they'll get on, how they'll fare as a champion. And, you know, too often that belt has been played with in the hot potato sense, and, you know, it's not used for its intended purpose. That's exactly what it was implemented, Intercontinental title in 79 and US Championship even before that. It was a stepping stone whereby the future world champions would win that belt first and would then go on to win the biggest prize. And that hasn't really happened. It's more used for talents who perhaps have been in the world title reckoning, who then have to be moved down to allow others to compete, you know, with the world champions. And then it gives them something to do. So that's why somebody like a Chris Jericho won it on multiple occasions, I think 9 times Intercontinental Champion or something silly like that. And that was largely, most of those reigns were after he had been an undisputed champion in the WWE. And it's been a similar story for a lot of others, where the belt should be there to help with somebody on the climb, on the rise, and to help with building their momentum. And yet it's just there largely over the last 10, 15 years as a title that just keeps certain stars even keel, but not necessarily to help them become bigger stars than they already are. And I think that's part of the problem. I mean, I know it's slightly before your time, Guy, but one of the classic examples of how that belt can work in that way is SummerSlam 1991. Now, the Intercontinental Championship was defended on that show. It took place in Madison Square Garden by Mr. Perfect, and he defended it against a tag team wrestler that had just not long been moved up from the tag team division into the singles ranks, and that was Bret the Hitman Hart. And they had a fantastic match by the standards of that time, and that helped to elevate Bret as somebody that was seen as a potential future world champion. And indeed, just over a year later, he became a world champion. And that's what the purpose of that belt is. And, you know, that has been lost along the way. And that would partly explain why the belts have been devalued. And, That's part of the reason why the Intercontinental Championship has had a bit of a renaissance, because the Miz has had that feel of somebody that had been, you know, at the top of the mountain and fallen down and was on the rise again, and the belt was helping him with that rise to help build that momentum towards potentially becoming a contender for the Universal Championship maybe later this year. So, you know, the belt and the person that has and still does hold the belt, you know, bounced off each other, and they worked hand in hand to elevate one another. But more often than not, that hasn't worked in that way. And it's largely just been a prop, whether it's the Intercontinental title or the US Championship.
Very interesting stuff. I mean, yeah, it's just kind of been a placeholder for anyone and everyone, really, at the minute. I think Miz is probably the best example. I mean, I don't think he's ever going to reach main eventing WrestleMania levels again, but for someone to be able to hold the mid-card title and only be on a par with John Cena in terms of relevancy in that regard, it must speak something. I mean, I don't think we're ever going to expect him to beat Brock Lesnar, but he's certainly one of the best heels in the company, so I could really see him probably this year or next year being a heel champion or even just a challenger. But he's definitely stepped up his game. But yeah, it needs to help make stars ready for the main event, and it's just not really done that. I can't really think of the last one who's transitioned. But we'll move on to match of the night: Natalya and Carmella versus Becky Lynch and Naomi. I can't remember this match more. Any thoughts?
Not really. No, it was just you know, about as forgettable a match as you'll ever see. I think Carmella got the winning pin.
Memory. She did.
Oh, blimey. So my memory's not completely gone then.
See?
yeah. No, other than that, it was just a match. You know, there was really nothing of note that occurred. You know, just...
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
A match that you know, these girls plodded through, and it was just there to basically fill up time on the card, but also to just give them something to do, because none of them have got anything meaningful going on. And that's part of the problem with the women's roster on SmackDown. And it's for that reason that Asuka is the new contender for Charlotte's SmackDown belt, because there was nobody suitable at all on the SmackDown roster to compete for the belt at WrestleMania. And so it's no surprise. But yeah, it was just a forgettable match all round, and one that I'm not going to really waste listeners' time talking much longer about.
So listeners, do go check out that five-star match if you can't remember it. But we'll move on to one of the, probably one of the better parts of the show for me anyway. I mean, I think you and Andy have talked about them being your secret little favourites on SmackDown when it comes to the Bludgeon Brothers. Talk about Usos and New Day, which obviously got interrupted. But before Bludgeon Brothers interrupted, I mean, were you thinking we're going to get another classic tag team match? Because it certainly started very fast-paced.
Yeah, it did. It didn't really have a chance to build into the kind of match, or threaten to be the kind of level of match that these two teams had last year, when, you know, they fought some fantastic matches together. You know, they just fought that they worked up to that spot where we saw some dives out of the ring by the Usos, and all five guys, in fact, were laid out at the top of the aisle, and that signaled the entrance to the Bludgeon Brothers, who then turned up and destroyed everyone's sight. And even by WWE standards, it was quite a strong, violent beatdown. Especially poor Xavier Woods, who was powerbombed on the steel steps, and his head came very, very close to catching the corner of the edge of the steps in a very, very nasty way. So he escaped serious injury, in fact, by an inch or less. So that was somewhat uncomfortable to see. But it was good and effective in getting over the Bludgeon Brothers as real threats to the two teams, and as viable contenders for the SmackDown Tag Team Championships. So job done in that respect. But yeah, it was a shame that we didn't get to see the match play out. You know, perhaps that kind of angle could have been run after the match had concluded. And you know, it was a shame that they felt that the storyline should take precedence over the match and match quality. Because if that wasn't the case, we would have seen another really good match. But we didn't, and as a result, the Usos retained, and it looks like they'll be facing the Bludgeon Brothers at WrestleMania.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly looks like. I mean, we've seen the Usos versus what was the Wyatt family back in the day when Usos were Roman Reigns Jr., back in the colourful days. And I think we've seen them have great matches before, so I think it's definitely WrestleMania worthy. But do you think we'll possibly see a triple threat match? Because obviously it kind of continued on SmackDown, where it was Big E, and I can't remember which brother it was, trying to get revenge, and it just didn't end up working out. So do you think we'll maybe see New Day versus Bludgeon Brothers versus Usos at WrestleMania?
That's a possibility as well. But you know, I prefer the WWE to kind of limit the amount of triple threats or four-way type matches, because then it just feels like overkill and just trying to get everyone possible onto the show. And I think sometimes matches are a bit more meaningful if it's between two individuals or two teams, rather than having, you know, three or four different participants or sets of participants involved. So, yeah, I would hope that it's going to be just one team against another, but there's always a possibility that they decide to book the three of them against one another. And if they do, I won't have any major problems with that. I think that they can still work a really good match. Usos are great. New Day on their day are also great. And the Bludgeon Brothers have one of the two individuals is really good, and that's Luke Harper. And you know, he
don't lie, you love Eric Rowan.
Well, I guess he's okay if you compare him to
Don't say Kane. I'm going to say. But yeah, I mean, I kind of agree. I mean, we've seen WrestleManias where you get massive tag team, massive ladder matches and stuff just to kind of get people on the card, and it seems a bit watered down. But I think I could see this being a triple threat match and working quite well because, well, you see the issues on the Raw tag team division, which we'll talk about in a bit. But I think SmackDown's a bit better considering the three main teams have got in it. But we'll move on to probably the highlight of the night, the women's title match. Ruby Riott versus Charlotte. Just how good was this match, Mo?
Okay, I have to admit I wasn't really a fan of it at all.
Really?
Oh, no. So we'll have to disagree then.
Ooh.
I thought there was just a bit too much in the way of sloppiness. There were a number of spots, and it wasn't just one or two, where they just didn't click. You know, there was one particular spot where the move just completely broke down, and it looked so awful. I think it was where Ruby Riott went into the middle turnbuckle. And, you know, there was various parts of the match where, you know, they just weren't on the same page. And I think it was perhaps Ruby Riott perhaps being a bit nervous, because normally she's a pretty smooth, reliable worker. I don't think she's a particularly great worker. She's not, for me, at the level of Sasha or Charlotte on her best days. She's not that level of worker, but, she's still, you know, perfectly fine, and the two should have had, in my view, a pretty good match. But for me, it wasn't quite there. It was let down by the fact that they just had a few too many botched spots, and you know, that's what spoiled it for me. But I think that the idea behind the match was good, and if the execution was better, it would have been as good as I was hoping for and was expecting. But that's the reason why I wasn't overly impressed with it.
No, that's interesting. I mean, maybe I just wasn't giving it my full attention. I didn't notice the botches, but I thought it was fairly decent. I thought Ruby Riott looked, well, maybe I was comparing her to the rest of the Riott squad, which makes her look like Shawn Michaels compared to the other two. But yeah, just touching on Ruby Riott, because we know Charlotte's pretty damn fantastic. I mean, do you think she has a certain level of potential? I mean, we've seen Alexa Bliss come in, who was pretty green on NXT and didn't seem ready, but we've seen her development in like 18 months, where she's gone from basically being very bland and boring and not ready to being probably the second best woman on TV at the minute. So do you think Ruby Riott has that level of potential as Alexa Bliss, or do you think she may be one of these ones who just kind of the odd challenger on probably the B show?
Perhaps the latter. I don't think that she's got the charisma or presence of Alexa. I think Alexa's got charisma dripping out of every pore. She's got some real gravitas presence to her, which is fantastic considering just how diminutive she is. You know, she isn't somebody that longer term I see is having the kind of success that Alexa's having, or certainly the kind of success that Sasha, Charlotte, to a lesser extent, Bailey have had. She, for me, isn't that level. I think she'll settle in as a mid-card level act. But, you know, on top of that, you know, she's not somebody that's really gotten over. The reactions to her most weeks are very indifferent. You know, there are certain elements of her overall package that still come across as a bit too indie and, you know, she needs to work on that as well. I thought she was called up perhaps a little bit too early. You know, you think back to somebody like Asuka, how long she was over on NXT, and yet with Ruby, she spent far less time. And we know the reasons why is because they wanted to have a 30 woman Royal Rumble match, and they needed to bring lots of women into the main rosters on Raw and SmackDown, because up until a couple of months before the Royal Rumble women's match, I think there was only about 12 or 13 women on both Raw and SmackDown. And when they, given they needed 30 women, you know, they just needed to bring a lot of women up very quickly. So that's why, you know, she was brought in, before she was ready. And, you know, she's certainly the more ready of the three from that group.
Yeah. I was going to build on them because, Logan and, oh God, what's her name? Carmella Jr. I can't remember her name.
Mandy Rose.
No, that's the Absolution one.
Oh.
We'll get there.
Well, they look alike.
Yes. Yes. I'm gonna stick with Carmella Jr. Them two, they just really add nothing to the show at the minute. So I think them two have been really rushed from NXT. I mean, that's Sarah Logan. I mean, she's probably going to be scarred for life by the last promo I remember her talking, which was about hunting and skinning animals or some crap like that. So I think them two, they're going to suffer long term. But I think Ruby Riott definitely showed she has enough talent to have a place on either Raw or SmackDown. She definitely has a place on the main card, whereas if you compare her to the other two members of the Riott squad, they're just not anything at the minute, really. So, yeah, I think at least Riott showed that she has enough talent and enough ability to be a part of the main roster, unlike the other two, which is just so bad.
Yeah, yeah. Just as a quick aside on Mandy Rose, in fact, I just saw a tweet from her this past week where she mentioned how her mum wanted some work doing in the house, some repairs or decoration or something. And she said that she's actually going to buy her mum a new house. And I thought, isn't that wonderful? you know, we often see these talents come in, but we don't really know about their backstories and, you know, stuff like that. You know, if WWE just, you know, did something on TV to highlight the fact, look, Mandy Rose is doing something for her mum in this kind of way, that'd probably be more effective in getting her over than all the kind of silly Absolution, kind of meaningless matches or other interviews that really don't do anything to get her over, or Sonya Deville, you know, and some of that kind of stuff we've seen on NXT, in fact, and that's worked quite well. You know,
I think it was Roddy Strong, wasn't it, who had...
That's right, yeah. Yeah, so, you know, the kind of stuff that shows you what their real-life personalities are like and what their kind of backstory is, and, you know, real-life stuff, you know, can help as well, and it'd be nice to see that on the main roster shows. And if they did do that, then somebody like Mandy Rose would perhaps get people's attention a little bit more than she has thus far.
Yeah, I definitely agree, man. I haven't seen that tweet, but just on Absolution quickly, who are obviously the Raw version of Riott Squad, but a lot better. I think that it's really unfortunate that Paige got her injury. That probably kind of killed that group. Which is obviously no fault with any of the ladies in the group. But it just kind of seems weird with Paige kind of being just a manager role, but she doesn't actually do much of the talking. It just kind of seems to be an empty role for all three of them at the minute. So it's a bit unfortunate. But yeah, I mean, I think it's been deemed the reality era of wrestling. So I think adding stuff or realistic stuff can really help. And I think that's how you make natural heels and faces, isn't it? Where Mandy Rose is probably being portrayed as a heel right now, but if she is that sound that she's buying her mum a new house, because whatever her background is, it should be natural face territory, shouldn't it? Really, But yeah, we'll move away from the women's division. I mean, we'll come back to it on the TV part. But the WWE title match. A few key points in this. I mean, it wasn't. It was never going to be a wrestling masterclass. I mean, you can never really have that on a six pack challenge. And I think this match had probably like two or three people too many in the match. But it was fun. It was fun for me. So more your thoughts on the match, and then we'll break down some of the key issues that obviously kind of developed on SmackDown as well.
I thought it was a great match. I really thought it was very strong. Yeah, I mean, you're quite right. It's not the kind of match with six people involved simultaneously that can build in a kind of conventional pro wrestling type of match. So it then inevitably ended up as kind of a giant spot fest, where, you know, it was quite a high tempo match almost throughout. And they were working through big spot after big spot after big spot. And, you know, that was something I was personally fine with. You know, I thought, they worked it very well. And, you know, they had some good twists and turns as well along the way. And, then, you know, just as it looked like, AJ Styles would be losing his title, albeit indirectly, not even being pinned for the belt. He then lays out, I think it was Kevin Owens, right towards the end with the, flying forearm, phenomenal forearm, is it even, and, retain the title. So that was, the right thing. You know, if they had AJ drop the belt and, I don't know, Baron Corbin win it, that just would have made no sense whatsoever. Even John Cena winning it. No,
I would have turned it off if anyone else won it, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, we want to see AJ and Nakamura. You know, that's a legendary match from New Japan Pro Wrestling, obviously. And, you know, that's a match that has kind of been teased and built towards almost since Nakamura arrived on SmackDown. So, you know, we're going to get that match, and that was confirmed by the outcome from this match. But yeah, as you say, there were some other, angles that kind of developed as part of this match, including, Shane, costing both, Kevin Owens and, Sami Zayn, pinfalls and, stopping the counts or, pulling the ref out of the ring. And, you know, that seems to be pointed towards some kind of match, involving Shane, possibly with one or even both of them at, WrestleMania. And I know that Shane announced, sorry to kind of go off on a related
topic. No, it's fine. I was going to ask you about it anyway.
Yeah, I know he announced Kevin Owens versus Sami Zayn two nights later on SmackDown. But then obviously both of them beat down Shane, and then he was making all kinds of weird noises as a showing off the air, which were a bit disturbing.
He was definitely giving birth at some point.
Yeah, to a hand.
Oh, God.
So it wouldn't surprise me if somehow this turns into a triple threat match, yet another one, with Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, and Shane. And, you know, to make it even more fun, why not just turn it into a fatal four-way and bring Daniel Bryan out of retirement? Because that was something that's been obviously teased going back months and months. So
they'll probably make it a six-pack challenge. Bring in Corbin, bring in Ziggler. God.
But, yeah, I mean, this was also billed as John Cena's last chance to get onto WrestleMania, which was really stupid angle, because nobody on earth believed that for a second. You know, he clearly will be working WrestleMania. So, you know, it was just one of those silly distractions to the match that I thought was otherwise a really, really good one and the match of the night for me.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. As I said on the intro to it, it was never going to be a masterclass, but it was always going to be madness and fun, and that's exactly what it was. But we'll go back to KO and Sammy. I mean, I was probably going to finish the show with this, but we might as well bring it up here. Hell in a Cell, we all thought, I think everyone thought, that this was going to lead to some absolutely beautiful tag team, some awesome TV. And it's just been so shit. It's unbelievable. And now we're going to get either KO over Sammy, which would at least be a good match to end this shit angle that's just been so poor over the last few months. Or we're going to get, I don't know, a triple threat match. Or we're going to get Shane to, I don't know, bring back Bobby Lashley or something stupid like that to represent him. It just so disappointing after that Hell in a Cell moment. So, has this probably been one of the most disappointing parts of TV, I don't know, probably last year and coming into this year?
Yeah, I'd say so. You know, it again goes back to all the same complaints that we've had, you know, in the past, whereby we've got parity booking, we've got this inability to really get behind certain individuals and make the most of them. And also, it's also a failure to really build upon the brand extension as well, and, you know, just kind of diluting it in different ways. And all these things combined have really not helped. And as a result, you know, watching TV is a chore. That's how it really feels. And no, that's not how it should feel. Now, with SmackDown this week, they did draw the highest rating that they've achieved for a good year. So they would have drawn some encouragement from that. But, you know, they can't get away from the fact that certainly with SmackDown, going back 6, 7, 8 months, it has really been dreary viewing most weeks. There have been the odd shows which have been pretty decent, but the show as a whole hasn't been a good watch. And traditionally, that show has been a fun couple of hours, and they have that benefit. The fact that 3 hours for a TV show is too long for wrestling, and with 2 hours, that's almost like the sweet spot, and they should be able to put out a good show week to week, well, certainly most weeks, that has a good mix of wrestling, storyline advancement, good interviews and promos. And they really, really struggle to manage that. And I think that they, in addition to looking at mixing up rosters, perhaps need to look at mixing up the writing teams that work on Raw and SmackDown. Yeah. Because clearly there's something that's going on that is working for Raw and isn't for SmackDown. And, you know, even if it means the lead writer for Raw is then given the responsibility for writing SmackDown, then maybe that's what they need to do, because it's in desperate, desperate need of...
They just need to sack the SmackDown writers, to be honest, because it's bloody awful.
I just... You know, when you've got some of the people on that roster like they have in Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn and co, and, you know, it's hard watching them, because the storylines they're involved in is just so awful, then you know that something's really, really bad and in need of urgent repair.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm just thinking about what happened on this week's SmackDown. It's the awkward Japanese promos that are stuck in my head. I mean, why are they making Asuka and Nakamura do promos? Andy touched on it last week, didn't he? It's bloody awful.
Yeah, I mean, if they're not good at cutting promos, or if they sound a bit daft to that kind of obviously American audience at the live shows, then just don't get them to go out there and cut promos. Or here's a novel idea: maybe get somebody to talk for them. I know that Vince thinks it's old school wrestling to have people go out there, but it works for Brock, you know, with Paul Heyman as his mouthpiece. He comes across significantly better than if Brock was out there cutting his own promos.
Yeah.
Because we know that that's not one of the things that he does well in. So by the same token, why can't they have advocates, or whatever they want to call them, but, you know, a manager essentially, going out there talking for an Asuka or a Nakamura. I mean, the other thing is also, you know, these individuals can get over, and remain over without the need to go out there and cut promos every week.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not an essential thing, yet WWE thinks that, you know, if we don't build up matches with promos, then people won't care. And I don't agree with that. I think that, you know, you can put people out there who won't say a word, and yet they can still, you know, come across as big, big stars. And that's one of the beauties of pro wrestling, is that, you know, you can allow them to just do their talking in the ring, bell to bell, and that is what makes them superstars. But WWE don't quite see it that way. They think that cutting promos on a weekly basis is part and parcel of being a WWE superstar. And is it doing favors for Asuka and Nakamura? Not really. I don't think they've suffered extensive damage to their characters or their momentum as they go into big title matches at WrestleMania. But, you know, there is that danger that they certainly start coming across as these comedy acts whose poor promo skills are there to be mocked and laughed at. And you know, that's not what they really should be aiming for, because that just, at its worst, plays into stereotypes and even perhaps casual racism. So.
Well, we saw it in the Jinder feud, didn't it? It was basically take the piss out of a Japanese person feud. It was like, what the fuck is this shit?
Well, exactly, yeah.
It's not even promo skills; it's just a language barrier. I mean, if you look at Nakamura, he like oozes charisma, and I have no idea what he's saying most of the time. And I know I like him. It's just mad. But yeah, I mean, the SmackDown writing team. Bookers or whatever the term is for the backstage people, it all needs to be changed. But we'll move on to the positive side of TV. I mean, we finished with Fastlane there, and just finish up with a couple pieces on Raw. Last week you obviously brought up the Roman Reigns steroid situation and Braun maybe being added into that, but it looks like we got your answer there. Mo, Braun winning the tag team title number one contender battle royale. Just your thoughts on him versus the Bar? I mean, there is rumours of him getting a partner. And, I mean, me and Alex and the wrestling group wanting it to be Elias. So just your thoughts on this?
Yeah, so I think they've now clearly made a decision that Roman will be the opponent for Brock. And, you know, that's fine. And got no problem with that. And Reigns will almost certainly win the championship. Again, you know, that's not exactly a major spoiler. And I don't know that for a fact, I should hasten to add. But, you know, all the talk is that
90% sure he's going to win.
Yeah. I mean, all the talk is Brock's heading to UFC. So if that's the case, then it really wouldn't make much sense for him to retain the title. Unless he's staying around for another month and then he drops the title eventually at the following pay-per-view. But, you know, clearly they've made the decision about Braun, and he will be part of the Raw Tag Team Championship match with an opponent, possibly. Even though that's not confirmed, he might just decide to just go on his own and go with the handicap match, which would be suicide where those titles are concerned. I mean, it would kill the credibility of those belts. And, you know, it would also be very damaging to Sheamus and Cesaro, who are, whilst not, you know, absolute headline main event acts, still two of the biggest stars in the company. And having them job to one individual would not be sensible. It really wouldn't. So, you know, they should put somebody with Braun. I'd be completely cool with it being Elias. And, you know, some of the stuff they could do together could potentially be comedy gold. It really could. I guess we'll just have to wait another week, a couple of weeks before we find out. And it might even be that the partner isn't revealed until WrestleMania itself. And if that's the case, I'll be surprised if it is Elias. They might decide to bring somebody new in, somebody returning to WWE. I'm fine with it because, you know, he needed something meaningful and certainly not to be stuck in the Battle Royal again. So,
yeah,
I'm fine with that. And I think it will be a pretty decent match as well.
Yeah, I think it'll be a good match. It's just a shame for the talented tag teams on Raw, I suppose. I mean, I'm looking at the Revival and probably the Club, probably more so than anyone. I mean, the Revival, since they've came up to the main roster, they've just been absolutely booked horrendously. I think they really need a move to SmackDown and a new beginning, but as we just said, the SmackDown writing will be terrible, but yeah, the Revival need a revamp. But yeah, I think this match at WrestleMania will be fun, but I hope it'll be Elias, because as you said, it has potential to be comedy gold. And we saw in their little feud that they definitely have chemistry between each other. And Elias, after his development and his popularity since coming up from NXT, definitely deserves a WrestleMania spot. But we'll move on to, we'll go through this quickly. We kind of touched on it earlier. Nia Jax versus Alexa. That kind of finally took its development. I wasn't sure if this was going to be a WrestleMania match, but you nailed that one as well, Mo. looks like it's going to be this program after, well, the company that doesn't like that against anti-bullying's doing a few bullying campaigns at the minute in the show, with Alexa's fat shaming. Backstage accidental promo kind of thing. Do you think we'll see Nia win? I know it's a bit early for a WrestleMania preview, but do you think that's what it's building towards?
It seems to be, yeah. I think they really want to push Nia outside of the company as somebody that's potentially a role model for larger girls, females, and somebody to get behind. Somebody who's amongst a lot of other women who are of an athletic appearance, or certainly slimmer appearance, and she's able to kind of hold her own and seen as just as relevant and also just as belonging on the roster as any of those likes of Alexa and Charlotte and the likes of them. So I think it will be a fun match. I don't think it will be one of the better matches. Alexa is a fine talent, but she's not, you know, one of the top female workers. Nia only really has really good matches with the very top workers. On top of that, the card is shaping up to have a ludicrous amount of matches. I think we're up to about 14 or 15 matches now. Either announced or will be announced in the next week or so.
Yeah.
And, I know that the card's booked for about a gazillion hours, but even then, they're not going to be able to, turn this into a great match. And every match can't be a great match. I think it'll be decent, but, I expect it will be one of the more forgettable ones. That said, though, I do expect there to be a title change. I think Nia will win. But we can go into that in a bit more detail preview the whole card for WrestleMania in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. And just the last couple of things on Raw. Roman got suspended by Vince. I mean, it was kind of a glance into the gorilla position and stuff like that, and Shane being on Raw for some reason. It's quite interesting. I think they're trying to paint Roman as a anti-authority kind of person now, obviously with his fake suspension and challenging Vince and stuff like that. I mean, do you think this is an interesting development?
Yes, potentially. Interesting that they've decided to get Vince involved in the angle. There has been speculation that Roman might turn heel at WrestleMania, and maybe they will use Vince as part of that angle to turn him heel at WrestleMania. Though that said, they are trying their hardest to try and portray Brock as a heel, as somebody who can't really be arsed with the WWE or the fans, doesn't really turn up to the shows. And you know, good old Roman is there as the guy that cares about the fans, cares about the company, turns up to work week in, week out, day in, day out, which is kind of a repeat of the storyline they had some 5, 6, 7 years ago between The Rock and John Cena. And you know, what wonders that did for John Cena at that time. It didn't really work at all. Yeah, but you know, WWE is just trying something, anything to try and reverse this kind of negativity around Roman. I don't think it'll work. I think he'll still get booed, even with the fans knowing that it potentially could be Brock's last night in the company and that he might have snubbed the WWE to join UFC. But interesting development nonetheless. And I guess we'll just have to see what it leads to over the next 3 or 4 weeks.
Yeah, definitely interesting. I mean, probably the most interesting part of Raw was John Cena calling out Undertaker again. I mean, it was probably one of the better John Cena promos I've seen in a while. I mean, it felt less scripted, even though it may have been, but who knows? It felt much more raw and much more real, to me anyway. But I don't want you to preview this match, but just in short, how are you excited for this? I know we wanted Undertaker to go out last year with the Roman Reigns ideal situation, but for me, when it gets called out that John Cena's calling out the Undertaker, I do get a little bit of shiver excitement. I can't help that. But what are your basic thoughts on it?
Yeah, well, I mean, not really keen on seeing the Undertaker return. Ideal time for him to have retired would have been after the Brock match. Most ideal would have been after his loss to Roman last year when he lay down his gloves in the middle of the ring and everyone thought he had retired. And it just cheapens retirements when, you know, big names, especially names big as The Undertaker, goes out in that kind of symbolic way and then just a year later returns. But if they are going to work, or if he's going to work, then who better than John Cena as an opponent? You know, it's a match that, whilst it's taking place on other cards, other shows, hasn't obviously occurred at WrestleMania. So that in itself should make it a real spectacle and something that should get a really good reaction from the fans. But again, it just doesn't play into my agenda, which is I want WrestleMania to go back to being the event that is used to try and elevate younger talent and not to be so much of a nostalgia show. And increasingly, as years go past, that's what it is. Too many part-timers return for a payday and take up all the key spots on the card. Undertaker, Triple H, Shane, one or two others, and you know, those spots should be the preserve of those that are, you know, there for the company throughout the year. And on top of that, you know, these are the kind of moments in front of crowds that size to build somebody up over the best part of a year and have their major kind of angle match storyline come to an end at WrestleMania, and that in itself should elevate them to that required level, whether it's as a headline act, whether it's just below that, to then proceed to becoming headliner in the year or two subsequent to that card. But that's something that eventually will have to come, because you know, they can't keep weeding these people out every single year. Yeah, so it might be that this year, maybe another couple of years, and then it can go back to being a card full of you know, the biggest matches of the year involving talent that are around all the time. That would be nice.
Yeah, absolutely. But it needs to be more relevant. I mean, if you have all the talent, just use it to get over the younger talent. I mean, I don't really want to see old talent versus old talent. It just doesn't really work. But I mean, we saw Triple H versus Seth Rollins. That kind of worked quite well for a short period. But I think that'll be enough for this show. I mean, I don't want to ask you about the final deletion thing on Raw next week because you'll just shit all over it. this has been the PW Index. You can follow us on Twitter at PW_Index. I've been your host, Guy Drinkle. I've been joined by Mo Chatra. Thanks for listening, everybody. Goodbye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.